Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Welcome into the Playbook. It is WTF, hashtag WTF Wednesday. What's the focus Wednesday? Inside the Playbook, I'm John Rook. Hey, welcome to Zach Lane today, who's actually running the controls, because we had to give our boy Kev a day off. Did you know that Kevin had worked, what, something like 19 days in a row? Toiling, slaving away for the Patriots and the Revolution? Oh, my. 19 straight days without a day off? I would tell Kevin that he should just, you know, man up and join the big boy club. Because I think we've all had stretches like that once or twice or 75 times in our career. But, hey, that's just me. You know, that's just me. Anyway, well-deserved. Let me guess. Let's see. It's 70 degrees outside. My guess is Kevin is probably somewhere about ready to make the turn on a local course somewhere. That would be my guess, just my guess anyway, but hope he enjoys it because we're not letting him lose for the rest of the year. So, Zach, thanks for being in here. Okay, so here's the table. We'll set it on WTF Wednesday for you. Number one, Bert Breer from NFL.com and the NFL Network. He will join us coming up in about 5 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on the Patriots moves that were made prior to the trading deadline. Wasn't it exciting yesterday, kids? Wasn't it exciting? Breaking news right at the tail end of Tuesday, Nitpick Tuesday show. Jonathan Casillas is a New England Patriot. So we'll get his thoughts on that move and certainly get his thoughts on the matchup with the Broncos. And also coming up a little later in this opening hour of the program today, Jeff Legwold, who covers the Denver Broncos for ESPN and ESPN.com. Jeff will join us in the Playbook and get his thoughts on the matchup, specifically with the Denver Broncos. A little bit of news to take care of today, if you had not heard. I know that the guys probably mentioned it, POW guys mentioned it, but just to get you started at the top of the program today, the Patriots did officially announce the signing of veteran defensive lineman Alan Branch today. Because Branch is officially signed, and he was seen in the locker room last week, but the deal was not made official until earlier today. Deontay Skinner, the rookie linebacker out of Mississippi State, was released. My anticipation is, and I've already had a couple of questions via Facebook, but my anticipation is that if he should pass waivers, then he will be placed on the practice squad. That would be my guess. And I would it's not that he's fallen out of favor or anything like that, but because they went out and they picked up the extra linebacker in Casillas yesterday, that just sort of makes it a numbers game. And Casillas is going to get the nod over Skinner at this stage. And Skinner has not disappointed with his play thus far. It's just, again, it's a numbers game, and they're going to go with the experience over the youth. And if they can pull him back onto the practice squad, they will. And if they lose him, well, guess what? It's good for the player because that means he's got a spot on somebody's 53-man roster somewhere. So we'll bring you up to date on that, but Alan Branch has officially signed with the Patriots. Now, as far as what's the focus today, clearly it's on the Denver Broncos, but I want you to think of two things right off the top of the program here. Two things, and two things primarily. Number one, as we are at the midway point of the NFL season, as far as the Patriots are concerned, what's been your biggest surprise in a positive sense, and what's been your biggest surprise in a negative sense? In other words, who is disappointed? So it's really a very simple question. Who's surprised you? Who's disappointed you at the halfway point of the New England Patriots season? Going to give you a few minutes to think about that, but there are several ways you can reach us here on the program, as you well know. Toll-free telephone number 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500. Web radio at patriots.com. The email address at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. John.Rook on Facebook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name spelling. You haven't submitted the friend request, go right ahead. Then you can post your questions, your comments, your criticisms. We can also utilize the chat function during the program if you like. But just positives and negatives for the first half of the Patriots. Let me give you a couple of moments to think about that before we start diving into that. Now we welcome in Bert Breer, who, of course, works for NFL.com and works on the NFL Network. You've seen him. I'm sure those of you locally have heard him on our flagship on 98.5 The Sports Hub as well. Bert, thanks for the time today. I sure appreciate it.
Anytime, John.
Let's start with the moves that the Patriots made right before the trading deadline. Clearly, they were depth moves more than perhaps impact moves. What were your thoughts primarily on Akeem Ayers and then Jonathan Casillas right before the deadline on Tuesday?
Well, I think Akeem Ayers was a move in response to Chandler Jones' injury. That kind of crystallized, because I know a lot of people look at him and say, "Oh, he's a linebacker. He's gonna that was reaction to Mayo." I think we later found out he's got some flexibility to play inside, but he's primarily an edge guy, and, with Chandler Jones going down, they're going to need to find ways to get after the passer. He's a bad scheme fit for Ray Horton with the Titans. I think it's just, on him, you're taking more of a flyer than anything else. And then, Casillas is more, to me, a guy who probably you can count on contributing all the way through because of his special teams ability, So I think one's a little bit of a gamble. And you hope you get something a little higher end out of him. Not that he's going to be a 10 sack guy or anything like that, but a guy who maybe contribute in your nickel defense. And then to me, the other one in Casillas, it's just the type of pickup that you make to plug a hole in your special teams. And, obviously they didn't give up a whole lot, as they shouldn't have, to go and fix that.
Because they gave up or had to release Deontay Skinner, who had figured into some, one or two down a series type of role in rotation in the linebacking core. Would you anticipate perhaps a guy like Casillas filling that particular role just from a depth perspective?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, you look at him and look, we all know what Tampa is and what Tampa's been. And, having the group that they have there, coaching, in particular, Lovie Smith, he favors the smaller coverage type linebackers, and Casillas is 220 pounds, so he fits into that mold. And, so he's not going to be, I can't imagine you have him lining up on the inside of your 3-4 on first down, but, could he fill a role in your nickel defense, where he's covering a tight end, something like that? I could see that.
And then, of course, the team announced today the signing of Alan Branch, finally, even though that was known probably almost a week ago at this stage. Does Branch also kind of fill this role in terms of depth, or do you anticipate his getting a little bit more of a rotational type of play?
I actually think, from a defensive standpoint, he probably projects to contribute a little bit more than the other guys. Just because of the need there. To me, it's where Ayers is kind of a temporary thing with Jones and Casillas, you kind of look and see Branch plays a position where there's been a crying need for some time. And you don't need me to tell you that. I mean, Bill Belichick's told you that. And you look at what they've done defensively. They had some trouble stopping the run the first few weeks of the season. Kansas City obviously gashed them. The Dolphins gashed them. And, you go back and you look at over the summer what they did. They traded for Worthy from Green Bay. They traded for Bass from Dallas. They've shuffled guys in and out at those line spots. And, where they were once a team, and I can remember 10 years ago when you walked into that locker room and it seemed like half the team was 6'5" and 300 pounds.
Yeah.
They don't have those big defensive linemen anymore. And outside of Vince Wilfork, it's really been a revolving door. And so now I think you bring in a veteran guy in Branch, and we'll see what happens with the league discipline with his DUI and everything else. But you bring in a guy like Branch, and you see if he can contribute. I think he's got a better shot at having a permanent defensive role than the other two guys you mentioned.
Yeah, certainly seems like there's very little risk involved here, and that is also a typical Patriot move in looking for guys that can fill specific needs and roles, and giving up very little on the downside if it doesn't work out.
Right, and I said this in the preseason. I think they just had a problem. They didn't have enough big men on defense. They didn't have the guys who could stand up in the fourth quarter to 325 pound guards and 300 pound centers and you know, on the 25th, 26th, 27th carry of the game, you know, where are your defensive linemen at? You know, and the Patriots have been light because they've gone through something of a philosophical change. I mean, you can see that with the drafting of Beasley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they've had a need in the interior of that defensive line for run stoppers. And, you know, I think Branch is a guy who is going to get a shot at filling one of those roles. And like I said, because I think the need there is more permanent and greater than the other spots, he's the guy who's going to come in and probably have the best shot to have a permanent spot.
Certainly a need in light of the fact that you miss really almost figuratively as well as literally the heart of the defense with Gerard Mayo being out.
Right.
You wrote a couple of days ago, I think it was last Friday, I happened to see on NFL.com, you had a nice conversation with John Elway about how he's built this team not only for Peyton Manning but to perhaps survive Peyton Manning whenever he decides to finally hang it up, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon. And whether or not injuries have certainly played more of an effect this year for New England than it seems Denver has, but is that also in tribute perhaps in part to the depth that Denver is finally building?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think part of it is they've drafted well, you know, and you look at some of the drafts that they've had, and they've still got a lot of those guys on rookie contracts, you know, and it's kind of where Seattle was last year where, you know, they're going to have to take care of some of those guys, but those guys still are at affordable rates. I'm talking about Julius Thomas, Demaryius Thomas, and Von Miller, and you know, they've brought in like high end frontline players, and those guys are still within the first 4 years, 5 years of their careers. And so those guys are still there on cheap rates, and that's allowed them to be aggressive in free agency. Now, you know, the bills for those types of things start to come due real soon for Denver. You know, but I think the biggest thing you got to do when you look at them is just applaud how aggressive they've been. And, you know, they, you know, Elway's sensitive to the idea that they're building to win now. I mean, he used the term, we're going to win from now on, to me last week. You know, he thinks this is sustainable as long as they continue to draft well. But you certainly see them putting a team around Peyton Manning that's built to win in 2014.
Yep.
And I think the best example of it, and I've told this story a few times, I think the Emmanuel Sanders signing is probably the best sign of it that you could possibly come up with. Because if you look at what happened there, you know, they thought they had Brandon LaFell signed. The price tag went up on him.
Mm-hmm.
And Elway's first reaction wasn't, you know, oh, let's play hardball. Elway's first reaction was, screw this. Who's the number one guy on our board?
Yep.
Number one guy on their board over Decker was Sanders. Let's go get Sanders. So they go and get Emmanuel Sanders. And the guy is, I mean, played as well as almost any receiver in the league over the first 2 months of the season. And the guy is really a scheme fit for them because they're running a version of the Patriots offense there under Adam Gase, and he's a guy who can play all three receiver spots. So, you know, I think that type of aggression has to be applauded when you've got a quarterback whose window is short. And, you know, certainly they're in that window of opportunity now. They're deeper and, you know, stronger than they've been the last 2 years. That's something that Elway emphasized. And, you know, the important thing to remember here is that you can't do that unless you draft real well, because you know, if the core of your team is, you know, like Seattle last year, before they, you know, went out and signed Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman, they got Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill and Percy Harvin, and they brought in all these guys. The reason why is because the core of the team was still cheap. That's where Denver sits right now.
Right. How does then, in this case, Bert, how does that particular philosophy compare with what the Patriots did this past offseason with or for Tom Brady, and what you think that their philosophy might be in terms of perhaps maximizing what he has left in his career?
Yeah, I don't think they approach it with the same aggression that the Broncos have. And I don't think that they look at things in windows the way that the Broncos are. You know, to some degree, the Broncos are doing their best to get John out, to get Peyton Manning a ring and put a team around Peyton Manning. You know, it's like John Elway told me, like the same type of team that he had when he was a player. You know, the type of team where if he throws for 200 yards, they could still win the game. You know, and so they were very aggressive going and pursuing that and building that type of team around an all-time quarterback. You know, the sense I get from the Patriots, and look, they've picked their spots, and, you know, certainly I think, you know, they go after the very high-end player, the guy like Darrelle Revis. Okay, that guy's worth extending ourselves for. They don't extend themselves for everybody. And, you know, the way I see it, you know, again, I've heard this for a few years now, that the Belichick's probably going to wind up outlasting Tom Brady in Foxborough, and that he wants to be there for a long time to come.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly see that reflected in the way that they operate, that this is a team that's not just being built for Tom Brady. It could wind up being built for Jimmy Garoppolo down the line, too.
Sure. Understood. All right, Bert Breer, NFL.com, NFL Network. Your thoughts then on this game and this matchup? The weather's supposed to turn south on us for Sunday compared to what we've got out there right now, which is about 70 degrees and sunshine while the team is practicing just out on the fields beyond here. If it does turn nasty, does this favor one side or the other, knowing that, A, both quarterbacks have performed well in that particular instance, but in the past, when it has been that way here, the Patriots have performed a little bit better?
Yeah, history says that Brady's the better all-weather quarterback than Peyton Manning. I don't think that's an arguable point. And, and it's not just if it snows. I think if it's windy, if it's cold. I think that what we saw last year, and if I remember right, it was real windy that night in Foxborough. I think what we saw in that situation was, we saw some of the age of Peyton Manning. And some of the problems that he's had with arm strength
mm-hmm.
come to the surface,
yep.
If it's really windy and it's really cold and you're dealing with some of that, I think some of the issues that Peyton Manning has had the last couple of years come to the surface. And, then the question becomes whether or not that's enough to minimize the talent around him, because he's got a damn good team around him. That defense is, it looks like one of the top four or five groups in the league right now. So this is a different group coming in. But just strictly from the quarterback standpoint, I guess certainly, I'd certainly in bad conditions give Tom Brady the edge over me.
That notwithstanding, is Denver right now, in your estimation, the top team in the NFL?
They're the top team in the AFC. The NFC is, to me, the NFC is still deeper, stronger overall. I still look at your Arizonas and your Seattles and your San Franciscos. Those teams aren't quite as strong a quarterback as the Patriots, the Broncos are, but I think they're stronger everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I have a hard time making that leap and saying, okay, Denver is head and shoulders above the rest of the NFL. Yeah, I know they blew out the Niners, and I know they went toe-to-toe with the Seahawks, and the Seahawks don't look as good as they did before, all the rest of it, but I think right now Denver is the top team in the AFC and among the top two or three teams in the NFL. And, I think it's a better team. The important thing here, it's a better team than the one that left New Jersey with that bad loss last February. It's a better team than they had during the season last year. It's a better team than they had the season before that. Health's going to dictate a lot, but you look at the talent that group has. I think you certainly could rewind back to that Seattle game in February, and you could say to yourself, this is a team that's way more equipped for a situation like that going forward than they were, 9 months ago.
Sure. All right, final one for you. Fill in the blank for me a little bit here, Bert. The winner of the Patriots and Broncos game this Sunday will be blank.
The number one seed in the AFC. I think I'd be a little more sure of it on Denver's side, because Denver already has a tiebreaker over the Colts.
Mm-hmm.
And then Denver would open a two-game lead on the Patriots and the Colts. I still think the Patriots are going to continue to get better. The Patriots certainly could blow the number one seed, even if they win this game. I look at the rest of Denver's schedule. I think the way all of it sets up. And if Denver wins this game, I think that you can pretty much tie a bow on that top seed and say that the road to the Super Bowl is going to go through Denver. So to me, that's what's on the line. I think if the Patriots win this game, obviously, then they're still in that race. I think we found out, third weekend in January last year, what a big deal that was.
Sure.
That they were able to, and it's not going to be like that every January weekend in Denver.
Right.
There are going to be weekends where it's going to be snowing and cold and all the rest of it.
Right.
But just being at home, I think, made a big difference for them. And, so that's, I think, when we look at it, legacies and all that different stuff, as far as 2014 goes, I think the biggest component of the game as far as the impact of it is the way that it's going to affect the home field advantage in the playoffs.
Agreed. Bert Breer, NFL.com, NFL Network. Hey, thanks for a little bit of time today. We sure appreciate it. We'll see you on Sunday.
Anytime, John.
You got it. Thanks. Again, there you go. That gets you started right away, right out of the gate. This is important. Not that you didn't know that already, but this game really, really means something in the overall scheme of things. Now, as Bert just mentioned to us, of course, that, you know, if the Patriots lose this game, Denver, pretty much in his estimation, all but sews up the top seed in the AFC. And then clearly the road to the Super Bowl goes through Denver. If New England wins on Sunday, then the Patriots thrust themselves into the favorites role, perhaps, in the AFC, largely because they'll own the tiebreaker if it comes down to a tie with Denver for the top spot or whatever seed may be involved. But they're not quite out of the woods yet. Part of that, I'm of the opinion, is because the Patriots have been hurt by some injuries and because they've been hurt by a little lack of depth, which is why I asked him the question about the depth, simply because he did the story talking to John Elway about it last week for NFL.com. And Denver has taken some great pains in the offseason to address their depth issues. This is something that I have been talking about for the last several years since really, you know, free agency has kicked in and the Patriots have figured out a way to, they figured out a way to stay above it all and continue to be successful. One of the big reasons that New England has been able to do this over a number of years is because New England's depth has been superior. They've been able to utilize the whole plug-and-play system when a guy goes down. You've heard the phrase many times, next man up. Well, that's what the Patriots have done, and they've done it very well. But now Denver is utilizing next man up to the extreme, to the point now where next man up means the next man up is not only filling the role, but is playing almost Pro Bowl caliber. This is something that New England did, and did very well when they were in their, you know, three Super Bowls in 4-year run back in the early part of the 2000s. So Denver now has taken really a page, in my estimation, taken a page from the Patriots playbook. And they've applied it to rallying around Peyton Manning, a quarterback that will still, regardless of what you may think about him, you know, and I've had a couple of people tweet me today with the hashtag I want Manning's head, which I understand completely from a fan's perspective. And it's great to get emotionally involved and all that kind of stuff, but he's still going to go down as one of the greatest to have ever played the game. But Denver is supporting him because they want to win as well. And the big difference between Denver and New England is Denver is looking at now, while New England, as we all know, and it's never more painfully obvious, Pats fans, than this comparison right here, right now, but that the Patriots are looking long-term and have always looked long-term in terms of sustainability and competability, not compatibility, but competability, if you will, against the rest of the NFL. They want to be in the mix every year as opposed to throwing all the eggs in a basket and winning it now. That's been the option. That's what they've preferred. That's what Bill Belichick has been building toward. Some of you love that. Others of you don't like that at all. But that's the main difference between Denver and New England right now. And the Patriots right now, should they win this game? Yeah, they absolutely thrust themselves into the favorites role in the AFC. But I would hesitate to say that the road to the Super Bowl goes through Foxborough. And that's exactly what Bert Breer just said. Not necessarily, not quite yet. Especially because of what the Patriots also have left on their schedule. We've talked about this 6-week stretch that began last week against Chicago, which is the biggest nut for them to crack of the entire, you know, of the entire schedule this year. And so because of that, there's still a lot of work left to do. And it starts this Sunday with the Denver Broncos here at Gillette Stadium. A little bit more on the Broncos for you now. We'll get back to some of your thoughts. Those of you on hold, hang in there for a couple of moments. The initial questions we've asked here in particular, what is your surprise in a positive sense? What is your surprise in a negative sense as far as the Patriots are concerned through the first half of the regular season? So give that some more thought. Your calls, your emails, your tweets, your Facebook posts, all welcome here. More on the Broncos now, though. Jeff Legwold covers the Broncos for ESPN, ESPN.com, and he joined us here in the playbook. Jeff, John Rook here in Foxborough. Thanks a lot for the time today.
Oh, no worries. How are you?
Great. Doing great. So this is a big game. We all know that. Perhaps the biggest game. I don't even know that you can even arguably say it's the biggest game, but certainly seems to be that way in the NFL to the first half of the season. From the Denver perspective, how do they look at this? Is it another game on the schedule, or does this mean something a little bit more, knowing that New England seems to be getting things more on a roll, especially on the offensive side?
Well, John, I think both teams would never sort of admit what this game is, but, you know, they have played so often in the past few years, including playoff meetings, that they can't help but understand that one of these teams is likely going to have a home playoff game against the other one, and the result Sunday could be a big part of that decision.
Sure.
And I think that's, you know, deep down, I would say that's where folks are at here. I mean, for the Broncos, too, their first half, they just feel like they've been slugging it out. I mean, they've already played Arizona. They've played San Francisco. They've played Seattle, played Indy. And now New England. And I think they just feel like, oh great, another great quarterback and another, you know, offense that can put up 40 points, 50 points. So I think all of that together, it was no effort for them to get down to business this week.
I can certainly believe that. Let me ask you this then. Which game from last year do you feel like might have the most effect, if any at all, on the game this year? The loss for Denver, crushing as it was in overtime here at Gillette, or the win for Denver at Mile High in the AFC Championship game?
Well, I think if you're talking about, you know, what had the most effect in how this team was constructed, I'd say that the regular season game, because they, John Elway went into the offseason with the basic premise that, okay, they scored a lot of points, but the defense wasn't good enough to win at all. And I think that's what they have attacked, and I think that's the biggest difference between last year's team and this one, is this may be one of the better defenses Peyton Manning's ever had on any of his teams. And we don't know what it's going to look like, you know, when they get into the postseason or down the stretch or any of those things, or even against Tom Brady, we don't know what it's going to look like. But they've done the most work there, and I think it was, you know, A, they didn't close the deal in that game in the regular season, and B, what happened in the Super Bowl. I think, you know, they were looking to fix that issue. They wanted to be able to, when they do get the lead, they wanted to be able to keep the lead.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. How much does that improve defense, you mentioned there? How much does that really help them on offense? Does it make them that much better a team, or has it been business as usual?
Yeah, well, I haven't seen too many. You know, they haven't been more aggressive in terms of down and distance. They're still, you know, they're looking to throw all the time, essentially. And, you know, they'll open up the formation, but they've gotten, you know, better field position. You know, they've gotten the short field once in a while because the defense got a turnover or stopped somebody, you know, forced a punt inside the 10 from people. And an awful lot of the time, even though, you know, they scored so many points last year, they had to drive the field an awful lot to do it. And I think that's been a difference, too, is they've had some shorter possessions this year that you didn't see very often last year.
Sure. You wrote earlier today, in fact, on ESPN.com that you feel like the running game has to have a role for the Broncos in this game on Sunday. And I'm curious, because Denver does like to throw the football and they're so effective in doing that, how Ronnie Hillman's performance on Sunday may indicate whether or not Denver's successful or not. What are your reasonings behind that?
Well, I just thought it was interesting, you know, just kind of messing around with the numbers that we all, for good reason, talk about the two future Hall of Famers at quarterback, and yet six of the last eight winners between the two teams have run for more yards.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it plays a role for both teams. You know, last year was kind of the anomaly when Sean Moreno had 224 yards rushing, something like that, and the Broncos didn't hang on to the lead, but an awful lot of games in that mix where the Patriots have either pounded away at the Broncos' smaller formations, you know, the nickel and the dime. You know, there was a game there a couple years ago, and they just they just crush the Broncos' nickel in the run game. And I think that's how it will have a role for either team, because you get the team in the matchup you want, you go fast so they can't substitute, and then pretty soon, you know, you've got a rhythm on offense. And I think both teams will be going to do that. And I always think that, and I know it makes me a dinosaur sometimes, but still the best way to protect a quarterback is to be able to run the ball when you want to. And I think that's really what the Broncos are looking for. I think that's the root of any of this. But Ronnie's speed changes the dynamic a little bit. He's a little different look than Monty Ball was.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I also find it somewhat interesting. By the way, you did mention this in one of your pieces, that the teams have played eight times since 2006, and the team that has had more rushing yardage has won six of those eight games. So I think that's significant, especially when you also throw into the equation that Denver right now has the number one rush defense in the AFC.
Well, that's, you know, Jack Del Rio, their defensive coordinator, always sort of presents it as you gotta do the dirty work if you want to rush the passer. You know, that sort of rushing the passer is the reward for playing good run defense. And I think that's how they've gone about it, that they can't really, you know, get DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller free doing what they do if you are in third and one, you know, third and two.
Mm-hmm.
They need those third and fives, third and sixes, and you get those by defending the run. And they've been pretty good at that. You know, they also, like the Patriots, when you play with the lead a lot, it's really hard for people to dig in and pound away at you. And I think they've benefited from that, too.
Sure. Makes a lot of sense. Jeff Legwold, who covers the Broncos for ESPN, ESPN.com, joining us here in the playbook. To that end, how has Aqib Talib, the expatriate, how has he helped solidify, you know, not only the entire Broncos defense, but how has he helped in defending the run game, you know, at least by statistically anyway, even though he plays cornerback, but certainly seems that his presence back there has helped Denver out immensely.
Yeah, it has, and he's the guy they went looking for. They wanted somebody who could play aggressive man coverage, because right now they play, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a defense in the league right now who plays more man coverage than they do. And they can do it because they like what Talib does at corner. They like what Chris Harris Jr. does at corner and the rookie Bradley Roby.
Mm-hmm.
And they play physical. They've taken their share of flags already for illegal contact and PI, but you know, they're willing to do it because they want to play that way, and that's why they went looking for Talib, because they wanted to play this much man coverage, and they knew they couldn't do it if they didn't find a physical corner who was comfortable, you know, along the line of scrimmage, and then, you know, could run in space too.
Sure. So, you know, we've seen the athleticism, we've seen the better defensive play, and we've also seen still some explosiveness in a guy like DeMarcus Ware. We've seen Von Miller return to what certainly seems to be his former self before he got hurt a year ago, although I know he was a part of the game here a year ago. How has DeMarcus Ware's presence helped raise the level of this defensive play? I mean, has it been just him, or has it been the others that have tried to sort of meet that intensity that he brings?
I think it's, you know, all of the above there. And I think the other thing, you know, people kind of look at who they signed in the offseason on defense, but it also matters the guys they got back off IR. When they made it to the Super Bowl last year, they had five defensive starters on injured reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those guys are back in this lineup. And, you know, they were starters before. So, I mean, those were premium players for them. So I think you put all that together, they simply have a better depth chart than they did at any point last year, and they have far more team speed on the field than they did at any point last year. So I think those have been big differences, and Ware has had a tremendous impact. I mean, they've kept him on sort of a pitch count. I mean, he doesn't play every snap on defense. They spot play him at times, but he has mentored Miller and been a good sounding board. And when you talk to defensive coaches and offensive line coaches, Ware is one of the best players with his hands among the top shelf pass rushers. And he has helped Miller with that part of his game. And, you know, know, Miller kind of had the rest of it going, and I think you're seeing the notch up play because of his work with Ware already this year.
Yeah, he's had a definitive role, and quite frankly, whereas a lot of teams probably were ready to look at a guy like Ware and take a pass, the Broncos, I think, hit gold with bringing him in. Flipping it to the other side, clearly, you know, I'm not sure there's anything else you can say about Peyton Manning that hasn't already been said, but looking at it from, you know, a matchup point of view, the one obvious that I guess is painfully apparent to everyone that takes the time to sort of break this down, and I'm sure this is not lost on either of the coaching staffs, is the Patriots do have a little bit of a vulnerability in the middle without a Gerard Mayo. Does that signal, in your estimation, the potential for a big day for a guy like, say, oh, I don't know, Julius Thomas?
I don't know. You know, I think, you know, history has shown Belichick will play coverage more than rush him.
Yep.
You know, I think when you go back and look at all those games, I've looked at them all at some point or been there. But and I think most often, even when Peyton was with the Colts, you know, Belichick has chosen to drop players in coverage rather than attack him with the blitz because Manning just eats up a blitz. You know, I still am fascinated by how many teams try to blitz him with extra rushers on the edge because he sees those all the time.
Yep.
They never get there, and it rarely does anything except expose a spot in the defense. And I always think Belichick has never fallen for that lure. He's always put players into coverage. He's taken away the bread and butter crossing routes that the, you know, any offense with Manning loves. I think that's the key. If you see the Broncos and the Colts before that, if you see them hitting those crossing routes with some repetition, then that I think is the trouble sign for any defense facing them, including the Patriots. If you don't see them, that means they've effectively taken that part away, and that would force the Broncos to work outside the numbers a little more, and I think that's what I think, you know, none of it's a great choice, but that's probably a better choice when you face Manning these days at age 38.
Yeah, certainly, you know, I think what you say there, it makes a lot of sense. I guess watching the Monday Night Football game and watched how Washington, you know, blitzkrieged really Tony Romo and the Cowboys with their very, very good offensive line really couldn't figure out a way to pick it up. The initial thought was, well, I wonder what would happen if someone tried to do that on Denver and specifically the Patriots, even though that's completely out of character for what New England has done in the past. Manning's secret has been to identify number one, but just get rid of the ball in an ungodly amount of time. I mean, no time at all. And guys, great receivers that he knows will be where they need to be in terms of trying to get the ball away at a quick time. So I don't know that there's a blitz out there that you could really definitively beat Peyton Manning with.
You know, it's tough. I think the ones that have sort of any limited success are usually the, you know, the late to the party blitz, the guy that comes from off the ball a little late in the play, you know, maybe from his blind side, but often he identifies those guys before the snap.
Yep.
Because you've run it out of that formation before. And if you've run it out of the formation before, there's a good chance he's going to remember it. And, you know, when, you know, like Washington put all that pressure in the middle, and teams have tried that because, you know, when the Broncos have struggled blocking at times, it's in the middle of the field. And teams have tried to overload in there, but then he just picks up the tempo and they run some, you know, some running plays wide or to where the extra rusher's coming from, and they sort of get people out of it after a while. So, you know, none of the choices are good, and I think that's why over the years when Belichick has had success, it's been because he drops 7-8 players in coverage and takes his chances there.
Sure. Jeff, final one for you here. Does Denver's strength of schedule to this point in time in their 6-1 start, does that help them against the Patriots? If so, how much?
You know, I think it always helps you just then in that you know for a fact that if, you know, you get one of those roll-up-your-sleeves games, you've already had to handle your business. I mean, their only loss is in Seattle in overtime, and they had the momentum at the end of regulation and just lost the toss. You know, and then the defense didn't get the stop that they had gotten in the third and fourth quarter for the most part. So, you know, I think the Cardinals win suddenly looks like a pretty big win from the Broncos' perspective, given what the Cardinals have done. And I think they've had very good moments, and I think the defense especially has had to work against the pocket quarterbacks and mobile guys. So I think they've had a good sort of smorgasbord of things to deal with.
Looks like it, doesn't it? All right, Jeff Legwold again covers the Broncos for ESPN and ESPN.com. Thanks for the time, Jeff. Safe travels this way this weekend.
Oh, certainly. Thank you.
You got it. All right, so you have a really good, I hope, little snapshot picture of what the Denver Broncos will bring to the table. If you didn't already have that in your own mind, there's not a whole lot of secret here. There's, you know, it doesn't require a lot of rocket science to figure out what the Broncos are going to do. I thought it was interesting that Jeff insists that the Broncos need to run the ball, and there's no question about that with the way the Patriots offense has been on fire over the last month, that, you know, finding, you know, the kid Hillman, in place of Monty Ball, who's injured, or has been injured, finding him has been a revelation. And that if they can find a weakness or a hole or a gap or some kind of soft, middle to the Patriots defense on Sunday, that he's the guy that could perhaps best take advantage of it. You know, I mentioned Julius Thomas, the tight end for the Broncos, and I clearly think those crossing routes over the middle, that's what they'll look for. So that's what the Patriots, I think, need to be best prepared for on Sunday. Now, whether or not they decide to, bring a safety down into coverage, whether they decide to man up with someone on a guy like Thomas, you know, whether it's Brandon Browner, whether it's a guy like Pat Chung, somebody, you know, we'll find out, I think, very early in the game on Sunday. But these are all intriguing things. In fact, the best thing to do is probably mix it up, because history has shown if you are able to, you know, cause Peyton Manning to think about it for just a split second or two longer, that's generally when you as a defensive unit can have some success against the guy. Not too many people have had that. Look, I like Denver. There's no two ways about it. I like Denver. They've got a fantastic football team. I like their physical makeup as well as their practical makeup here. They are dynamic. They are explosive on offense. They have, you know, right now the best offense in the NFL. Even though statistically they're not quite at the top, I think they're fourth or fifth overall in the NFL. Let's see. Let me look at my numbers here. Denver's offense in the NFL right now is sixth in total offense, third in passing offense. Believe it or not, statistically speaking, Denver is better defensively. Denver's defense is fourth ranked in terms of yards allowed in the NFL. They lead the league in rush defense, as Jeff and I were just talking about, 17th in pass defense. So they could be vulnerable there, could be. Put some quotation marks around that word. Patriots, conversely, are 10th in the NFL overall in total offense, four spots behind Denver, 17th in the rush, 10th in the pass, and the Patriots are 12th overall in total defense in the league, which is 25th against the rush, which is obviously not a good number, but the Patriots' pass defense is number two. They slipped a spot this week. They were number one last week. They slipped behind Kansas City. Patriots' pass defense is number two overall, which I guess is a good thing. Teams have decidedly tried to run the ball against New England because of the yardage that they have given up the middle. That certainly has something to do, I think, with the yardage that they've given up through the pass. Does Denver, here's the big question, does Denver decide to change it up a little bit, knowing that they, too, could have some success by running the football? I doubt it. I think Jeff Legwold doubts it. I think most fans in Denver would doubt it. You're gonna dance with who brung you to the dance. And the Broncos are effective because of all of the weapons they have lining up at Peyton Manning's disposal. We've talked about that off and on, even, lamenting Tom Brady's apparent lack of offensive power and prowess earlier this season when the Patriots were struggling on offense. That, of course, leads me to our questions of the day here on hashtag WTF Wednesday. What's the focus Wednesday? We're at the halfway point. You're eight games now deep into the season. This is week 9 in the NFL, and the Patriots will have their bye week coming up. So it's kind of an all-in scenario this week against the Broncos. You need to win it. If you can win it, you get a week off to rest before you have to tee it back up again. But in week 9, you're halfway through out of the 17 weeks. What has been, strictly looking at the Patriots now, what has been your biggest positive surprise? What has been your biggest negative surprise? Your biggest disappointment, in other words. 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. @JRBroadcaster on Twitter. John.Rook on Facebook. Michael just sent this via tweet. He says, down. Vereen was expecting more when healthy. Up. LaFell, nice to see a veteran wide receiver having success. Two very, very good choices. I'm not necessarily sure about Vereen expecting more when healthy. I think most people are tending to think that Shane Vereen is a different back than he really is, that maybe he would be the guy that would certainly step up, if not take the job away from Stephen Ridley. He's not that kind of guy. Vereen's role, when they kept him, drafted him out of Cal and kept him here, was largely to fill the same type of role that Kevin Faulk had here for years. Certainly can get you yards in the run game when you need it, but they wanted a guy that was dynamite coming out of the backfield catching the ball. They wanted a guy that potentially could line up wide and do damage deep, which would be a distinct matchup disadvantage for some defenses out there, and we've seen that already happen this year as well. So I think his role in this particular instance hasn't quite been what some fans would, I guess, have expected, if that's fair or not. But that's a good start. Very good start right there. All right, let me get a couple of emails in here, then we'll get to the phones. Jim from Camp Pendleton. Maybe it's just me, but over the years I've noticed that sometimes players return from injuries and suspension midseason appear a little more explosive because they've missed weeks of hits and grinding plays. This seems to apply mostly to running backs and D linemen. Best example I have to offer being Von Miller. Do you think there's any truth to this? I absolutely believe, Jim, that there is truth to that. Fresher legs means more explosiveness. There's no doubt about it. And he says, if so, do you think there's any chance that Jones comes back looking better than when he went down, especially coupled with the experience gained by the surrounding talent in his absence? I guess it really depends on how serious Jones's injury is. We've been told that it's a hip injury. Out of practice again today. Don't expect that he's going to come back anytime soon. We've been told a month. Boston Herald again reported even last weekend that it could be all year. Nobody really knows. The general consensus is the Patriots seem to hope or have hope for him to return for the stretch run, whatever that means. December, playoffs, who knows? I guess it just depends on the severity of the injury. It's certainly going to take some time off his legs, but, you know, you need to have the ability to be able to twist and turn and utilize some, you know, straight-ahead speed. And if that hip is keeping you from doing that kind of running, it's hard to say. I think in some instances you could be right, Jim, but in this one, I'm not copping out here. We don't know the severity of his injury. If it's a nagging thing, I would say then, yeah, there's probably a tendency he could come back fresher, so to speak. But if this is something that's literally keeping him off his feet, who knows? Who flat out knows? Chad in the ATL says, yo, John, well, the surprising positives to me are Pat Chung seeing the light back in a Patriots jersey and Tim Wright, a young talented player at a much-needed spot with good hands and football IQ. The biggest disappointment would have to be Aaron Dobson, who's regressed dramatically and is now relegated on the inactive list. It's quite clear he won't be here next year. All right, good stuff, Chad. What say you? To the phones. Melvin in Tennessee, you're up first in the playbook. Hey, Melvin.
Hey, what's going on, John?
How's it going today?
Pretty good.
What do you think?
Positive? Let's see. I guess somebody's already said LaFell. I think that would be one of mine. But, of course, backing up that, if not even first, would be Stork. I didn't think a rookie lineman would come in and help. You know, I think he's been pretty good as far as helping out that line. I thought Stork was a positive coming in there, helping out. On the negative aspect, I think I have to go with Soder. I think he's getting a lot of penalties. He getting beat off the edge a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What's another negative? I think Dennard, I've seen a higher play for him, but he's been injured. So I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to give him an excuse, but, you know, he hadn't been to the level that I've seen. So the number one, I think, will be Stork helping out that line. Number two will be Soder.
Okay.
Speaking on this game, you know, sorry's been said. It's the thing that I've noticed about Denver that I've seen is just that the biggest difference is the defense. I think that when I get a chance to see them, normally once they get a hold to you, you're done. And I think I've talked about, you know, New England missing a lot of tackles. And I didn't even get a chance to watch much of the game last time, but I click on to see one series, and I see Bennett making our defensive backs look silly. And Collins finally missing a sack. So, mm-hmm. You know, just once we get there, we got to be able to take the guys down. I think that'd be the biggest. That could be a big difference in the game. Obviously, in any game, just being able to get the guys down once we get a hold of them.
Right.
And like I said before, you know, if we can get a hold to them and we can flood the people, you know, get Manning off a little bit. I've seen him be off. I think just so I kind of have a guy describe that. I just talked about this on the last show, but the Chargers did a good job of that, of going in there, like kind of disguising pressures and sending stuff when Peyton Manning wasn't looking, and it kind of threw him off a little bit. So I think we can do that and then sustain some drives. You know, this is our game to win.
Sure, sure, sure.
But,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I believe what you said too is that although if we do, not trying to be negative, but if we do win this game, we still got such a long way to go, man. We still got the Detroit, Green Bay, the Colts.
Well, that's why I said off the top, I said, you know, when we kind of got into this today, it's like, you know, this is just game two of this six-game gauntlet they're getting ready to run through. There's plenty of, landmines, so to speak, that are left ahead. And that's why I think, in part, when I was talking to Bert Breer from, the NFL.com earlier, that, he says, you know, if Denver wins, they've kind of already played some of the meat of their schedule, and they've won most of those games with the exception of losing in overtime at Seattle. But for the Patriots, they've still got the gauntlet left ahead. So while the Patriots probably thrust themselves into the favorite role, they haven't locked anything up. But if Denver wins this game on Sunday, they have all but locked up and thrown away the key on the AFC coming through Denver.
Right. So I think this, that's going to be huge. You know, the fact that it's going to depend on, how far we can go, really. I think that New England's got to be able to turn it up and keep it turned up for a while as far as the level of play goes, because I think the next big challenge will be, maybe another quarterback that can shoot them out with them and Aaron Rodgers coming up. But I think all the other games are good, but we'll worry about that when we get there.
Yes, sir.
The main thing we got to do now is just be able to beat them. And we know when you get to the ball, when you get on these people, secure a tackle and go for that strip.
Absolutely.
Go for the strip.
Absolutely, because as we all saw last year, losing that ball almost cost the Patriots. Now, it probably should have, but then the Broncos make some crucial mistakes late in the game last year that allowed the Patriots back into a situation where they could win it.
Right, and this is the last thing I'll say, then I'll get off. But the Chargers, and now I'm thinking about that game, had a very crucial kickoff. The Broncos had a kickoff return that's questionable with a fumble. And Emmanuel Sanders had his ball stripped from him.
Mm-hmm.
Either one of those strips could have easily turned that game around, especially at the point of the game. I want to say that the Chargers were almost winning, and they were at the ball at the 25, something like that. A strip or turnover, obviously, especially a game like this, can easily turn this around.
So, absolutely.
You know, go get that turnover.
Good stuff. Good stuff, Melvin.
I'll see you later.
Yes, sir, you will. Let's get this one in right here. Dana in Connecticut. Dana, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Long-time Pats fan. I go back to Sam the Bam Cunningham, so I've seen the lean years. A couple points I want to make.
Yes, sir.
I think the biggest disappointment are two guys on offense, Nate Solder and Edelman. He's dropping a lot of balls, and I think the X factor with Edelman is because Gronkowski's so active, and he's the biggest surprise. I thought he was going to be more of a red zone threat, and they would kind of feature him in tight, but – He's been, last couple games, it's been a big, big factor.
Yeah, I won't disagree, certainly, with the Dobson factor or Solder. You know, those two, I think, would probably stand out on offense. Edelman, I'm not quite yet to throw him under the bus. He's had two tough weeks where I think he's dropped three total passes over the last couple of weeks, maybe four. I'd have to go back and look at it. I think Gronk's emergence has helped really overshadow the real need, you know, where Edelman's concerned. I think you're getting to the stage now, though, especially when you're going to go up against these opponents, and it starts with Denver for certain this week, where, you know, if Edelman continues to have a case of the dropsies, you might even see him come out of the game and a guy like Amendola get some reps in there because you have to have some reliability. So I'm willing to give him the pass. Not quite ready to call him a disappointment, but he's headed that direction.
Yeah, he's dropped off quite a bit. I mean, last year he was the focal point for Brady, but Brady didn't have any option.
And let's keep
he's wide out. I think when they put him out on the edge like that, the slant is impossible for anybody to stop. I mean, and he has a lot of athleticism for a big man.
Yes, that's very true. One more point about Edelman, though. Let's keep in mind now, he helped keep this team and this offense afloat when they were struggling over the first month of the season.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big Edelman fan. I think he's the toughest guy in the field. And I think he's going to have a lot of big games and big catches. I'm not throwing him under the bus by no means. He's kind of disappeared almost Amendola-like, and I don't want to see that continue because he is a big factor. He's a possession receiver, and he needs to be. I just hope Brady doesn't forget about him. The other thing I want to say is Patrick Chung's been a big surprise on defense. And I think Jonas Gray is going to be a go-to guy. I've been high on him since preseason. I was so disappointed that he didn't make the starting roster to begin the season. And I think this injury to Ridley, I hate to see anybody get hurt, but it's going to be a blessing because it's going to showcase this. Jonas Gray is a tough, physical, quick, intense runner. And I think he's going to have a big game against Denver. I think they're going to run the ball surprisingly well.
I think that they will definitely try to stick it right there in the middle against Denver. I think they're going to challenge him in that regard, in an effort to perhaps, maybe get them thinking twice about pinning their ears back on the rush.
That's
I think
right.
Jonas Gray could be a huge key, to the Patriots' success if they are able to get any yardage between the tackle at all. I totally agree with that assessment. He's a great kid. He's a hard worker. And you are 110% right. Sometimes, you know, one person's misfortune is another guy's fortune. And while nobody wanted to see, a guy like Ridley, who we all really, I think, like him around here for his ability and what he has done in the past, this is an opportunity for somebody else. And right now, it's a guy like Gray who's got that opportunity.
I agree. And this talk of picking up, the Beast and LeGarrette Blount, I think is foolishness. I don't think their need is at a running back. I think they're solid there.
I think they pretty much concurred there, and that if you do have to think about it, it'll happen in the offseason because Ridley's a free agent. So
true.
All of this will be discussed in the offseason.
True, yeah. I like what they're doing, too, with the linebackers, shoring up, bringing in three impact players. They're, you know, they got an edge rusher and this kid from Tennessee. I can't remember his name. And the D-tackle hopefully will be able to step in and play well because that's where their needs are. What's his name? Ninkovich finally showed up in a big, big way this week, and he's got to be a factor out there.
No question.
I just hope we get Chandler Jones back sooner rather than later because he can dominate a game. He is so intense on that, and they need to put pressure on the passer as we move forward into these tougher games with San Diego.
I believe that
Green Bay.
I believe they're expecting Dominic Easley to step up in Chandler Jones's
absence. He has
too.
I like his game. If he can stay healthy, he's going to be a dominant lineman.
Yep. I agree, and that's why they've tried to patch some of the issues in the middle with a guy like Casillas, a guy like Keem Ayers is going to come in as well on third down, largely third down passing downs to provide some rush. You know, so I think that they feel like with Easley and Ayers that hopefully they can, you know, and clearly they had three sacks last week, you know, against Jay Cutler. Chicago's any great shakes there in terms of protection, but fact is that they were able to at least get adequate pressure, and I think they need at least that, if not more so, that against Peyton Manning this Sunday.
It's going to be an interesting matchup with the DBs versus the receivers of Denver this week. I'm a little nervous with we've had trouble covering the tight end, and I'm a little bit nervous of the matchups. So I think we'll be okay with our corners. I think, you know, I expect to see a lot of Arrington on Welker. He matches up well with him in the slot, runs well with him for a short period. Arrington's his Achilles heel is playing the ball on the deep ball, but he's very good in the intermediate zones. I think he'll be. You'll see a lot of Arrington in the game as well as.
Yeah, they'll.
But I'm really concerned with. I'm hoping they match up Browner with number 80, their tight end, because the other Thomas guy, because I think he can match up with him.
I think we'll see that. I do think that that's a matchup that we will see. I do think also, as you suggested, we'll see the Patriots largely in a nickel for most of the game, and they'll try to vary their coverages, as we've had both of our guests on the program today talk a little about, because that seems to be the best way the Patriots have defended Peyton Manning in the past.
Yeah, and Chung's got to come up big for the run. He's got to. We've got to shut that down and make them one-dimensional. We
absolutely
can't allow any rushing yard, because if they start running the ball, we're in big trouble.
Yes, sir. Good stuff, Dana.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the phone call. All right, I'm going to sneak in a quick break. If you're on the phone, stay right there. You'll be up first. Webradio@patriots.com, the email. 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number. You can also get right through on Twitter, @JRBroadcaster. Follow me on Twitter, and then John.Rook on Facebook. Your positives, your negatives. Give me one for the first half of the season for the Patriots on either side. Who's been the biggest surprise? Who's been the biggest disappointment thus far? Your thoughts coming up in the playbook.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown! Ha-ha!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
Want to step inside the playbook? Hit up John toll-free on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, back to the man, the myth, the legend himself, John Rook.
855-PATS-500. webradio@patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster, and John.Rook on Facebook. This one on Twitter from Mr. International. He says, Randy, biggest surprise. This is from Randy. I guess he's Mr. International. That's very impressive, Randy. Biggest surprise is LaFell and how well he's playing. Biggest negative is Dennard, who has been playing mediocre lately. I would certainly go along with LaFell on offense in terms of being a positive surprise without a doubt, although I think the Patriots expected him to have a hand in doing what he's doing now because that's why they went out and got him. Interesting to note, if you recognize in the opening hour of our program today, we were talking to both Bert Breer and to Jeff Legwold from ESPN that, you know, it's common knowledge. I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but Denver is where Brandon LaFell originally wanted to go in the offseason. And it looked like he was going to be headed there until Denver internally decided, you know, our guy is going to be Emmanuel Sanders. He's number one on our board. Let's go get him. And they did, which left kind of LaFell waiting in the wings, and he kind of fell to New England. So I wonder if Brandon LaFell plays a little bit of an extra chip on his shoulder on Sunday. Something to think about anyway, isn't it? As far as Dennard's concerned, I'm beginning to share with you the disappointment, Randy, because I'm not sure, I can't be convinced yet, that he's the kind of guy who will play through nagging things. Just not sure of that. And that has been a disappointment to me, personally. All right, to the phones. Trey in Memphis, thank you for hanging on as long as you have had. You're in the playbook. Hello, Trey.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good, buddy.
I guess I got to start up with my biggest surprise, man, is just how fast the offense turned it around, man, and we're scoring points now. I don't care who is against. We're scoring points, man. I mean, that is a big surprise of the big turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any of us saw that coming. I mean, you talking about, it looked like two different teams, man. Two different teams.
Right.
The biggest negative is, I expected us to be more stout up the middle on the defensive in the front seven. And even before Mayo went down, man, we was having trouble, you know, stopping the run up the gut.
Yep.
And I don't understand what's the problem. I mean, you know, we got the big fella bench there, and I don't know if it was the two-gap read scheme that we was doing, but I don't think they're it seemed to me that they've kind of stepped away from their two-gap read. I mean, to talk about Denver, I mean, they played some big games, John. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of people talking about, okay, they beat the Cardinals, which I don't think Carson Palmer even played that game. And the Cardinals haven't stopped the pass very well all year. Okay, they beat the Colts. The Colts don't defend the pass very well, and they're not a good defensive team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they They was in the game against Seattle, but Seattle doesn't even seem to be a shell of nothing but a shell of themselves from last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I think, you know, the wins that they have, I mean, you know, I don't think their wins, they don't have any impressive wins. And I think, you know, we're giving their defensive line too much credit as far as them stopping the run. I mean, you would be crazy to try to establish the run if you're down 17 and 20-plus points. So, you know, I really feel that, you know, I got more confidence in my offense than I'm afraid of Denver's offense. What's your take on what I just said?
Well, I think a lot of different things. You know, I'm sure what specifically you're asking me.
Well, what do you? How afraid are you of Denver's offense?
Not afraid at all. I mean, and the Patriots wouldn't be afraid at all. I think what you have to be concerned with is, you know, Denver's multiple targets that they can go to on offense, and you almost have to kind of pick your poison. Again, Trey, you have to realize the goal for any defense, forget Denver, the goal for any defense when matching up against an offense is to make that offense as one-dimensional as you possibly can. That, yeah. You can't argue this point. Inarguably, Denver's the toughest team to face for a defense, I think, of any team in the NFL because of the different types of receivers and backs and the weapons that Peyton Manning has. That's what we spend all of our time, you know, basically perseverating over, you know? I mean,
yeah.
we talk about this all the time because
you're right.
He's got all the toys and we don't have any. So you have to kind of pick your poison.
Now, I really believe that this secondary that we have, I mean, we seem to be getting – in a good rhythm, man. And we do have a little shifty nickel back that we can use. And I think that, man, we're going to cause some problems.
I think Arrington and I think Logan Ryan, I think his role actually probably should be more of as a nickel or a dime kind of guy. But, right. You know, he might still develop into an every down corner. But I think between those two guys, I think they do enough to where you're at the very worst, you're adequate in a nickel package.
And I think, John, I think this is the week, man, that Devin McCourty really makes his presence felt. I really do believe that, man. I think he got a big interception, man, that lies ahead in this game. Mm-hmm. All right, John, I'll talk to you tomorrow, guys.
All right, thanks, Trey. Appreciate your thoughts there. Here's Olivier in Virginia. Olivier, how is it going today?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
Well, doing well. Thank you, sir.
Excellent. How's the weather over there?
It's great today. It's 70 degrees. The sun's out. Team's been practicing outside, and it's going to get about 35 degrees or more cooler between now and Sunday.
It's nice. It means that we will have divine intervention.
Listen, I don't know about you, but I'm not quite ready for the heavy coats and the gloves and the hats and all that stuff. I'm just not ready for that yet. I realize we're getting there, but this is supposed to be fall. We had such dynamite weather for the Bears game last Sunday. Overall, I was really wanting one more good fall weekend before we start talking about, you know, the cold stuff.
I understand, John, but this is not about you and I. It's about the team winning.
No, it's not. It is about you and I. It totally is about you and I, especially for those of us that have to be out in the elements, but you know, it is what it is, right?
Yes, it is. I was calling in terms of the disappointment. I'm not really sure that I can pinpoint one person as being disappointed at. I'm just as a whole, I'm always thinking that what else can we do to surround Brady with ultimate weapons and protection for him to do best what he does, just like Denver has done with Manning.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately that may be the deciding factor, unless, you know, we play in conditions. Of course, we'll be playing at home, and I hope that people show up as they did against Cincinnati, because I think it made a world of difference.
Yep.
And B, also hope that the weather will be more in Brady's favor, because I just don't see on paper, and of course the dynamic of a game, it cannot be predicted, and the coaching and the game schemes and so forth, you know, we'll have to adapt. But on paper, and I think some of your callers already have alluded to, and yourself as well, is they have a lot of weapons, both defensively and offensively. I don't know about the special teams, but it's going to require our young talent to to step up and really show what they are made out of. And it's a great test for everyone. Brady and some of the guys already have done that. They know what it is. They had a fantastic game last year when they came back after a really, really terrible start, and they did show who they were, but it was not good enough. So, you know, this game, it's up in the air. I on paper, I kind of favor Denver, but emotionally speaking, it's going to be at home, so I think it's going to be, you know, a tough fight. I'm not really sure what you think about it and what the other callers have said so far. And then last is, are we happy with what we've done, you know, yesterday at trade deadline? Is it going to help us with our defense?
Well, I think it's going to help us, Olivier, in terms of depth. You know, we talked about that a little in our opening hour of the show today, but in terms of depth, Casillas will help. He'll help primarily on special teams. I think that they probably will use him in certain situations. Ayers has already stepped in on passing downs, and I think you'll probably continue to see his presence in there quite a bit, especially when you know a passing down is upon you. You know, I think Dominic Easley is the one that really you need to look at. The one that I think that probably intrigues me the most in terms of what he might offer, and then we didn't really get a look at all last week, Branch, was Alan, right? Branch. Yeah, yeah, because Branch, you know, was here last week, although I guess they still had some contractual things to work out. I don't know if it was an injury. I don't know if he wasn't in shape. Who knows? But the deal was finalized today, so because of that, now you're going to have Alan Branch somewhere. Well, yeah, I listen, if you're going to sign the guy, you're going to have to put him in there. And knowing that you've got problems up the middle, that you're signing him specifically to address that need. So why the heck wouldn't you put him in there? I mean, honestly, I can't think of a reason why you wouldn't. I mean, you know, plus here's the other thing. You got a week off next week. Let's throw him in there and see what you can do. How bad could it possibly be? Then he can also, you know, if he needs to adjust or what have you, then you've got basically 2 weeks to worry, to work on it. So I'm intrigued by Branch. I want to see if he gets some time in there, what he might help plug the middle. I don't expect Denver to come out full force and run the ball, because that totally is
That's not what Manning does.
Yeah, that's not what Denver does, and they don't do it successfully. I mean, well, they can do it successfully, but they're pass first. And so because of that, I fully expect them to play their brand of football, and it's going to be up to the Patriots to, you know, negate some of that to force them to go to other options. Again, it's all about trying to make the other team one-dimensional as possible. That's darn near impossible when it comes to defending the Broncos, and that's to Denver's credit. So do what you can to take the guys out. The matchups, to me, are the intriguing part about this, where the Patriots defenders match up with all these receivers. You know, I've already seen it, you know, talked about, and, you know, NFL insiders on ESPN are talking about it, and I've seen people write about it, and I've, you know, heard, you know, some talk shows talk about it already. And, you know, honestly, I think it'll be interesting to see what the Patriots ultimately decide to do. It seems to make a lot of sense, you know, to put your corners on the two wideouts. Demarius Thomas and also on Emmanuel Sanders. And then if you're really worried about Julius Thomas up the middle, do you take a chance with a guy like Jamie Collins in coverage, because he struggled earlier in the year in coverage? Do you allow, you know, your safety to have a run at him, you know, whether or not it's a Patrick Chung that comes up and helps, you know? And then what do you do as well about, you know, Wes Welker? Even though he's not the Wes Welker we knew, he still can be a kind of guy that can, you know, nickel and dime you to death. And so does your nickel guy. In my particular instance, I think your nickel guy is probably the one that gets him. And whether or not that ends up being like an Arrington or a Logan Ryan, well, then that's probably what you're looking at. But that's where the real intrigue lies. And will the Patriots be confident enough in basically going man up against these guys without help over the top? If they can, then I think that's where you see the Patriots could have some success, because that's where a guy like McCourty could come over the top and have some success in creating a turnover.
Do you see Denver as how the Patriots looked when we had our perfect season? Do they have
no? I don't. I understand the question. I don't think quite that way. I mean, it's sure it's similar. It's similar. Clearly, they've already stubbed their toe, because they, you know, they had the tough overtime loss in Seattle, which obviously is a very difficult place to play. But you know, I think they have that, you know, type of demeanor about them. You know, so I'm sure they are supremely confident. And maybe that was the best part about that New England team, that it was supremely confident. Of course, we saw later in the year, whereas the Patriots, you know, were probably helped out by the fact that, you know, they had a little bit of a softer schedule late. Yeah. Denver may also be in that kind of a situation with their divisional opponents still notwithstanding, with the exception, of course, the Patriots and the Giants late in the year. But, you know, I think it. They probably have as dynamic an offense as overall from top to bottom as we've seen in the NFL since 07. I just don't think Denver has quite the running game that the Patriots had.
That's correct. Yeah, from that perspective, I agree.
Right.
Now, when we look at what Denver did against San Diego, or should I say what San Diego did against Denver last time they played, you know, I thought that it gives the Patriots hope that with a banged-up defense that San Diego's had, I think a lot of calls went against San Diego and in favor of the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that score could have been different with a few different calls. And I think they are beatable. And this was in Denver by San Diego. So hopefully we can take a few notes from San Diego's playbook and apply it more consistently when we play the Broncos.
Okay, I agree. Yeah, I think so. I think that's going to be the key. You know, I thought Denver handled San Diego surprisingly well, and I thought San Diego made some mistakes in that game that if they had avoided, they probably could have made a better game of it. But I don't think that was really ever, to my knowledge, a close game at all, and Denver won that by 2 touchdowns. So the challenge for the Patriots, like any challenge in any big football game, playoff or non-playoff, is to not make mistakes.
Agreed.
And if the wind is swirling, then maybe you want to think about taking the win. And of course, my pet peeve is take the damn ball on the opening coin flip if you win it.
Yeah.
You know, I think.
Well, you always say that.
I do say that. And I realize that I understand why teams do that. I wrote about it this week, but it kind of goes right up my backside because it defies logic. I mean, especially if you've got a team, especially in this instance, when you want to do whatever you can to keep the ball out of Peyton Manning's hands. Keep it away from that offense. You want to take the ball as much as you can, control the clock as much as you possibly can. And so if you win the coin flip, I'm taking the football. Because then you can, you know, maybe you could, if you're fortunate and you got the confidence in your offense, you could work out a 7, 8, 9, 10 play drive, take up 5, 6, 7 minutes of time on the clock and get some points on the board and immediately put the other team at a disadvantage.
I agree. I think that's the way they're going to have to play it. They're going to have to keep Manning on the sideline if they want.
Yeah, but you know, if they win the coin flip, Olivier, they're going to defer. They always do.
It depends which direction the wind blows.
Well, you know, that could be a factor. But then I would say if the wind is of gale force, where, you know, it's going to be gusting to 30 miles an hour, which is the initial report for Sunday, then there might be some consideration to deferring. Mm-hmm. And then taking the wind to open the game. That is a possibility. And if the winds are that high, then I think I can understand a little more why you might defer. So you
then
can have the wind.
Then it's going to accentuate the possibility for a running game.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's also true. Lots of intrigue in this one. There's no doubt about it.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call, John, and I look forward to speaking with you soon.
Yes, sir, Olivier. Thank you.
I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Thanks. Olivier's in Virginia. Opens up a phone line for you, toll-free at 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500. Let's get to some emails here, and also have some other Facebooks, and I think a couple of tweets just came in as well, so we'll want to get to that. Brian in Essex, Vermont says, John, I think the focus has to be getting to Peyton. Yesterday, a caller for the FF Champs proposed a hashtag to exemplify this, hashtag We Want Manning's Head. Yeah, somebody hashtagged that one to me today. Not that we want to hurt him, but get on him. Make it physical. Make his body ache from the pressure. Hurry ups and hopefully sacks. So I say the focus is getting to Peyton and making him pay for it every single time. Fair enough, Brian. Hashtag, we want Manning's head. Might have to use that one again tomorrow as well. All right, Brian, good stuff. Let's see what else we have here. Michael says, John, I think John Casillas was a great pickup. He will bring depth. He's a really fast coverage linebacker, sort of a tweener linebacker. Yep, 6'1", about 225. Safety type, just like Jimmy Jimmy Collins, but it's Jamie Collins. I think Bill will get the most out of him like he always does. I think Bill is converting to a faster coverage linebacker. What are your thoughts? Yes, that's something that we've known for basically the last year, I think, Michael, that it's clear that the Patriots defensively have decided that they needed to get lighter, quicker, faster, younger defensively, all of the above, in order to keep up with some of these spread offenses, and particularly in the AFC like Denver's, because it seems like the Patriots and Denver are going to play each other every year, because the way that the NFL schedule formula comes out, if you win your division and Denver wins their division, guess what? You're going to play each other every year. That's just what happened. That's the way the schedule formula works out. So, hey, you're going to have to go up against the Broncos at some point. So you might as well learn how to build your defense around them, because, you know, the road to success is clearly going to include going through Denver, Colorado. I totally agree with you on that one. Steve in Killeen, Texas says, John, my surprise this year has been Amendola on special teams, returning kicks. Now I need to see him continue the trend. My disappointment has come with the defense not being effective against the run, tackling, and being able to bring any consistent pressure to the opposing quarterbacks. Amendola's come on a little bit in the last couple of weeks. We had known, and we saw it briefly, I think, before he got hurt last year, that there was certainly the possibility, or even after he got hurt more specifically last year, that, you know, he could certainly return kicks, more specifically punts. But it's kind of hard to pull a guy like Edelman out when he, you know, has led the NFL in punt return yardage every year. But now that the Patriots seem to utilize him more so in offense, and Amendola, they want to try to get some use out of him, I think it makes perfect sense. Amendola's got some good speed. He's got some good ability. And his ability to return on special teams, both punts and kickoffs, has been a bonus. So I don't know that I'd go that it's the surprise, but I understand a surprise. As far as your disappointment is concerned, Steve, clearly not being effective against the run overall has to go up there at the top of the list. We all thought before this season started, and certainly well before even Gerard Mayo got hurt, that would be perhaps one of the strengths of this team. But I sensed a movement in the force when they got rid of Tommy Kelly, you know, before the first, right as the first cut deadline came during training camp. And a disturbance in the force. That's what I was looking for. I sensed a disturbance in the force. And I have said it before, and I will say it again. The Patriots clearly felt like they had players in hand that would be able to do the job that Tommy Kelly did, we all thought, somewhat effectively last year, and we were looking forward to his coming back to this year. It hasn't quite worked out that way, but I'm just telling you what I think the Patriot perspective was there. And now that we've known that that could be a potential trouble point, they have addressed that through their various moves here leading up to the trading deadline yesterday. You know, they've signed now Alan Branch. They have traded for Jonathan Casillas. They have traded for Akeem Ayers. So they've obviously now admitted that, well, we do have a problem, and yes, we do have a need that we need to fix. And I think they also feel like, you know, Dante Hightower can continue to, you know, progress as well in terms of running the show back there defensively. Steve says, to digress briefly, I have been inspired by Miss Robin, and I am currently working up what I hope the Pats will bring a big batch off to the Broncos. A big batch of piss-offedness pepper sauce. Okay. I am also going to see if I can work up some barbecue sauces for the PFW crew and Ms. Jackie Britton as well. Keep up the outstanding job, and all the best to young Kevin and whatever he is dealing with. Indeed. He's dealing probably with a bogey putt on 13 right as we speak. And that certainly has him, I'm sure, piss-offedness right now. But thank you, Stephen Killeen. That's good stuff. And believe me, I'm also inspired by Ms. Robin. She's been very, very good to me and for me. Brian also adds this. Here's a positive for you. LaFell, he was advertised not so well, but has really fit into the scheme and made a heck of a place for him in the offense. True. Negative, twofold. Vereen, I don't think anyone thought Vereen would replace Ridley or come close to what he does because they're different types of backs. However, early in the season, I thought we saw Vereen improving in the catching game, and he's still been off and on. Granted, he did have that touchdown, but he still drops those wheel routes, which is ridiculous. Well, The problem with wheel routes is a lot of times you got to be able to swivel back and look back for the ball. And so if the ball isn't where the back can catch it, Brian, he's going to have trouble with it. That ball has to be placed perfectly, in my opinion, on a wheel route. The other negative, he says, the revolving door of failed wide receiver draft picks. I don't know who the wide receiver coach is. I don't know who the wide receiver scouts are. But someone's got to step in and say, okay, you can no longer draft wide receivers. You can no longer coach them because you either can't identify the talent we need for the organization or you simply can't identify wide receiver talent. That's probably more of an issue for the player personnel folks. And Brian says, hashtag, we want Manning's head. Okay. Good to see that's going to get some use today. Let's see that on Twitter now. So, you know, let's make sure that when you're tweeting me at JR Broadcaster over the next couple of days, hashtag we want Manning's head. Hashtag WTF Wednesday. Tomorrow will be also be hashtag prediction Thursday. Come on, we got to trend this stuff. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Christopher in Hamilton, Ontario. Biggest upside, Brandon LaFell turning into a phenomenal number two receiver. Gronk is number one. Can't argue that. I've seen LaFell turn up the field, break tackles, and be a power receiver. Makes me think Carolina misused him. I would have a tendency to agree with you there. His confidence factor has increased tenfold. And now that, you know, he certainly seems to have a comfort level with Tom Brady, he's showing Brady and everyone else what exactly he can do with the ball after he catches. Love the yak. Love yak. Receivers that bring me yak, bring you yak, they are invaluable. Yards after catch, yak. And that's something LaFell is doing, and he's doing well right now. Biggest drop, he says, going to the receiver. I'm so upset with Aaron Dobson and Kembrell Tompkins. Both were taller receivers and year two supposed jumpers. Tompkins ends up going to Oakland, where he seems to be doing decently well. Dobson's a write-off. Healthy scratches, I feel like he's a Haynesworth-type disappointment. Well, let's put it this way. The guys that are on the field right now and playing are doing a better job than Aaron Dobson. Otherwise, Aaron Dobson would be in there. They're doing a better job than Aaron Dobson in the games. Clearly, they're doing a better job than Aaron Dobson during practices. Otherwise, Dobson would be in there. This is a team that isn't going to put a player in there, I think we all know this, just because he's a draft choice, you know, second round or third round or first round or whatever. Or because that they've had failures in identifying wide receiver talent in the past, this isn't a team that's going to put a guy in there just to make themselves look good. That's the one thing that you can really admire about this organization. They are who they say they are. Thank you, Dennis Green, for that one. This team does that. And so if Dobkins, combine the two receivers here. If Dobson is outperforming in practice during the week, then guess what? Dobson's going to be a game day active. Until he is, there's not a spot. Tell me who's going to replace him. Who is going to replace him? Or, you know, on the inactive list. It's not going to be Amendola because he's valuable in special teams now. Edelman? No. You going to take him out for LaFell? Uh-uh. What about Brian Timms? You going to take him out for Brian Timms? That may be the only guy right now, and the Patriots like Timms' work ethic, and they like his strength, and they like his ability to go up after the ball. Now, that supposedly was what Dobson's strengths would be, and yet we really haven't seen much of that. Therefore, that's probably why you're seeing Timms more than Dobson. To me, that's what it comes down to. Haynesworth type of disappointment? I don't know, because Haynesworth was a free agent. Dobson was a draft choice. It's still a disappointment any way you look at it. Aaron writes in, he says, down, Dobson, Devy, and Solder. Up, Vereen, LaFell, and Wright. I'm afraid that T.J. Ward's going to go for Gronk's knees, though. Thoughts? Well, listen, you can't go into a game thinking anybody's going to go in and purposely try to take someone out. That would keep you from playing and keep you from doing your job on the field. And I don't really believe anybody like that exists in the NFL. Look, we can talk about it and people can surmise and conspire and do whatever what they want. But listen, once a player takes that first hit, you forget about everything else on the field and you must focus on your assignment. You know, the Patriots have made a point through the years having a saying, and that's known as do your job. And I think that it can apply to any team in the NFL, because once you get wrapped in the mouth, man, you're not interested in anything else but what is immediately in front of you. Now, if it happens to be Gronk's knee, well, that's another matter. But I don't think anybody goes into it saying, you know, I'm going for Gronk's knee, or I'm going for his elbow, or I'm going to take somebody out. Nobody does that, because you know what? If you go into that, then you're gonna lose your focus on your job, and when you lose your focus on your job, you're gonna get beat somewhere. So I don't believe that. I just don't. I really don't think any, because everybody understands how hard it is to get in this league when you're a player. Everybody understands, everybody works hard. Everybody understands that everybody's good to an extent. Some players are better than others, sure, but everybody respects everybody else in this league. Dirty players? Nah. I don't think they have a shelf life. We've seen it in the past, but we're still talking about dirty players from 30 and 40 years ago. If you want to talk about Jack Tatum, that's fine. But other than that, really, Conrad Dobler, who used to bite guys, I mean, you know, I think players are so much stronger, faster, more physical. You don't have the time, otherwise you're going to get your own block knocked off, so to speak. So I'm not worried about that at all. And Gronk, I can't imagine he would be as well, nor would the Patriots be worried about that. Ward needs to worry about himself. Luke says, John, best surprise for me would be Brandon LaFell, who's delivering big plays, and the most disappointing is Vollmer, who is apparently losing his job to Cannon. I don't know necessarily that that's the case. I don't think he's losing his job, folks. I had a couple of emailers, and in fact, a guy on Facebook from Germany yesterday who got a hold of me and said, how come Cannon is subbing in for Vollmer? Vollmer deserves the time. He's the starter. And he's German. I understand all that. Clearly a fan. I get all that. Look, the Patriots have made it very, very clear. They like rotational situations on the offensive line. I think they finally decided on who their main line is, and yes, that includes Vollmer at tackle. But Vollmer, as you recall, has had a history since he's been here of back problems. He had a history of back problems when he was in college at the University of Houston. So because of that, doesn't it make sense to make sure that, you know, every second or third, you know, series Vollmer gets a little bit of a rest so he can have some fresh legs, or better yet, a fresh backside, so he can actually play for the stretch run? Not only for a game, but maybe have him still healthy for December? That's the rotation you're seeing with Marcus Cannon coming in. And Cannon clearly, and I didn't think this would be the case, but Cannon clearly is a better tackle than he was guard. I thought he'd make an outstanding guard. Apparently he doesn't have the footwork to do that. So he's going to come in, and he's going to rotate, and he's going to get some time at right tackle and at left tackle. And maybe that's his role. And as long as you find your role, know your role, just like Rock says, know your role. And I guess Marcus Cannon is learning his. So I don't think he's taking time away from Vollmer. I think he's taking the time that the Patriots have deemed him to take from Vollmer to keep Vollmer healthier. Luke also says, let's not propel Denver's defense. We have seen these scenarios too frequently in the past with the Steelers defense and the Texans, and every time Brady destroys these hyped defenses. So for once, let's learn lessons from the past. Okay, I think I understand. So you don't want us to look past Denver's defense. No one here is looking past that defense, Luke. Trust me on that one. Sean says, John, the biggest surprise for me is LaFell. The Patriots have brought in so many free agent receivers over the years that can't pick up the system and are disappointments that I didn't have any expectations for LaFell. I thought he'd be another Lloyd or Ocho Cinco. LaFell has had some growing pains, but now he's clicking on all cylinders. I expected to see a year two jump from Dobson, but his injuries hurt him in many ways. I haven't seen Dobson screw up on the field, but then again, he's never there. I'm hoping he just lost his spot to LaFell and will improve, but it's hard to really know. That's fair. That's definitely a fair assessment. I noticed most teams play run defense on first down against New England. We saw the last couple of weeks that New England has taken advantage of that with play action on first down. But I'd like to see them try that even more, to the extent where Denver has a nickel with dropping the safeties on first down, and that's when they can run up the middle. I don't want to see Vereen running up the middle unless it's a draw. He has great speed, terrific hands, but he's not going to go pound for yards. You know, that's actually a pretty good, well-thought-out email, Sean, and I happen to agree with it. You're right about the run defense against New England on first down with Ridley when he was in there. Play action on first down the last couple of weeks without Ridley in there, and it's worked well. Guess what? Play action has worked well. They've scored touchdowns in their opening drives last couple of weeks against Chicago and against the Jets. So my guess is that Denver probably may look likewise. Maybe they'll have a nickel in there on first down. If that's the case, I'm going to wager that a guy like Jonas Gray gets the start at running back. Now, you may have two backs in there. You might see Vereen in there, even lined up wide in that instance, but it wouldn't shock me to see Gray get the call. And if Brady reads that and the Broncos show that on defense, sure, you absolutely can try to stick it right up the crawl. That's a recognition thing that Brady obviously is good at, just like Peyton Manning's good at. Brian says, agreed the pass has to be perfect. Talking about the wheel routes to Vereen earlier. Agreed the pass has to be perfect, but his drop in the Bears game exemplifies the problem. Pass was perfectly on target. Vereen dropped it because he was staring at a linebacker coming at him. Unacceptable. Drop may not matter against the Bears, but every single play is going to be critical against the Broncos. And drops like that can mean the game, in my opinion. It can mean you don't get close enough for a field goal, or it can mean a three and out when the game is on the line. Hard to argue that point, Brian. You're right about that, especially if it does mean potential points or a chance at points coming off the board. But if you have a linebacker coming right at you, what are you going to do with the ball? Better yet, what are you going to do with your pants? I mean, come on. Let's be real here. This is Kareem from Connecticut. I am truly a fan, and as such, we have no saying in day-to-day operations of how the Patriots function. Yes, it pisses me off when they don't play well. Yes, we know Denver has a better team as long as we compete and look somewhat like they belong on the same field. Well, I could live with that. Patriots are professionals. I will live with whatever they decide on doing. We have no choice. Well, gee, thanks for the doggy downer, Kareem. I mean, really. Yes, I know. What we say here is going to have very little effect on what the guys down the hallway are doing right now. I understand that. But, you know, you also understand that we got a lot of diehards here that love to talk X's and O's. They love to talk scenarios. They love to talk personnel. They love to dive into the other team. And, yeah, we like to have a little fun, too. And to that end, next week being the bye week, you know what that means, don't you, kids? Those of you that have been a part of this program for the last several years. And again, this is our 14th season doing the playbook here on Patriots.com radio. But next week, bye week, means that, and we haven't really definitively decided on the day, because I think it depends on what kind of bye week guests we might have. But we will bring back Game Show Wednesday or Game Show Thursday next week. That means prizes can be had and won here on the program. So just because it's a bye week and there won't be any game to be played the following Sunday doesn't mean we won't be here in the playbook talking football. We will be. But we'll also have some fun, too. And you'll have a chance to win maybe a little something-something. More on that tomorrow and certainly next Tuesday when we get to Nitpick Tuesday following this game on Sunday. All right. A couple of other tweets that we want to get to here. Webradio@patriots.com, the email on the surprises and the disappointments for the Patriots on the roster individually or collectively, since we are at the halfway point of the season through 8 weeks, with 8 more weeks to play, including the bye week, 9 weeks left to go in the NFL regular season. This one comes from, I don't even know who this is. Hard for me to read your handle here, so I'm just going to say, what's more important, Vereen catches the ball or takes a hit? Catch, in my opinion. Hashtag, we want Manning's head. There we go. Now we're using it. Well, sure, the catch is more important. Absolutely, the catch is more important. And you want him to be able to concentrate and do the job. I'm really being kind of flip with Brian, but I think that this may be Brian. But in all honesty, you got to understand, you got to put yourself in the player's, you got to put yourself in the player's shoes. You got to put yourself in the player's shoes. I'd like to go back and look at that particular play and see where the ball was placed. Maybe you have done that, Brian, but I'd like to go back and do that. That might put a little bit more on it. might show you the pressure that's there. Nick in Vegas says, I'm most surprised this is on Facebook now. So if you want to put a post up on Facebook, absolutely, by all means. I'm most surprised by LaFell. Wasn't sure how much he could step up. And apparently he's playing his butt off. That will be needed. I think that Brandon LaFell's positive surprise aspect here is as large as anyone's. Large as anyone. So it looks like he's going to take the cake with being the positive surprise for most of us here to the halfway point of this season. Blarco in Los Angeles says, most surprised by Gronk. I never doubted him, but never expected him to recover from his injury this well. It's actually a pretty good point. I think we were all hopeful that that would be the case, that he would improve. And that when it started out the way that it did here at the early stage of the season, that in all honesty, it was frustrating, I think, for a lot of us. But he certainly has poured it on over the last couple of weeks. And then Belarco says, most disappointed by Chandler Jones. I thought that he was going to wreak havoc since we have a good secondary, which would that would give him some extra time, but that didn't happen. And now he's injured, which doesn't help either. Well, look, he had 5 sacks before he got hurt. That was team lead, and I think it was like tied for 3rd at the time he went down in the NFL. So I'm not so sure that that's a category for disappointment. I would tell you that, you know, I was a little bit disappointed that teams decided to target him and run toward him. So that would sort of negate his ability. I don't think he's as good in run defense as he is in pass defense, and that might be more of an overall disappointment if you're really going to call Chandler Jones out for something. But I don't know that I'd be disappointed in his ability to rush the passer. And Belarco says, hashtag, let's get Manning's head. So he's given us a little bit of a variation. Jose says, WTF, we'll be getting 7 instead of 3 and getting off the field on 3rd down. Oh, I see. Okay, so that's what, okay. Preferences, I suppose. Yep. You definitely want to get 7 instead of 3. That's his focus, he says. What the focus will be getting 7 instead of 3 in the red zone and getting off the field on 3rd down. Absolutely. Should be the focus every game. 110% every game. Mary Beth says, disappointments. The injuries, Mayo, Ridley, Jones, and the slow start. Surprises, positive surprises, the play of Wilfork, Gronk, and Chung. I'm almost a little surprised that we haven't had more, and I think she's just the second one that's mentioned Patrick Chung's play. Because I think Chung has come back and played at least as well, if not better, than we saw him during his first time around in New England before he went off and, you know, signed the free agent deal with Philadelphia, did not have a good year in Philly. And then he got released and came back here. And he's now resurrected his career, in my opinion. Again, he's found his role. Now, because the Patriots haven't really had the player they thought would step up move into the starting role, whether that's Harmon or Wilson, it's been an opportunity for a guy like Chung to step into that, and he's made the most of the opportunity. To me, that qualifies as an unequivocal surprise, pleasantly so. So, you know, I can almost break it down where LaFell has been the positive offensive surprise for the most part, but I'd also have to say Chung on defense is equally surprising because he's come back and he's played at least as well as we saw him play previously in New England, at least. And he's come in and he's been a starter and he's become a fairly good every down kind of guy. Now, he still has coverage troubles. Still has coverage troubles, but his run defense has been particularly adept and he's a solid tackler. Let's see, Kareem says, what we need to do is to make sure that the only place where Manning is throwing the ball is to the sideline. 3rd down, 3rd down, 3rd down. Confuse the hell out of Denver's defense as well. Throw a couple of trick plays on them, forcing them to take a couple of timeouts. Well, I don't know so much about trick plays as I would suggest to you that you want to stay solid and cause a confusion in coverage. This is what has led to success in the past. For the Patriots, when going up against a guy like Peyton Manning. And because of that, I'm not sure that you're going to be seeing the Patriots really adjust too much differently. I know yesterday we talked a little bit how it'd be great to see, you know, a blitz package or two put in there, but you know how Peyton Manning handles that and how he's handled that really against anybody. I guess more I was just impressed with what I saw Washington do against Dallas on Monday Night Football this past week. I'm thinking, wow, that'd be great if you could find a way to do that. But as we know, Manning's as savvy as they come. There's a reason that he will be a Hall of Famer. There's a reason that this team in Denver has been built up around him to the point where, you know, they're on the precipice of controlling the AFC from here on out this year, barring any injuries. And that's what they will be in position to do if they beat New England here on Sunday. Peyton Manning knows how to play against other teams' defenses. He just knows. He knows how to read it. He knows how to pick it up. He knows how to take advantage of it. Guy's seen just about everything thrown at him that can be thrown at him. That's the supreme challenge, I think, for, you know, Bill Belichick, for Matt Patricia, and for every player on that defensive side of the ball this week. I'm not sure that, from a Patriots fan perspective, that you're not somewhat relieved to know that this team seems to be on an offensive roll and that they should be able to score against Denver's defense, even with Denver's defensive improvement this season. But the key to this game will be whether or not the Patriots defense is patched up well enough and game-planned well enough to keep the Broncos out of the end zone. To me, that's got to be the focus. Should be the primary focus, at least in my opinion. And if you're able to do that, well, then you've got an opportunity to win the football game. And then, of course, it breaks down to all of the basics. You've got, field position. You've got mistakes, turnovers. You've got things that you have to try to force and keep from committing yourself in order to stay in the ball game. All right, Kat in Chicago says, my positive this season so far has to be LaFell. He's really made a difference, and it looks like he and Brady have clicked. He's exceeded my expectations. Another vote for Brandon LaFell. And then she says, my negative for the season is play calling, specifically in the run game. I know we need to establish the run, but I feel like McDaniels pushes it well beyond that. Once the run game gets going, we should be going to the pass, but instead it seems like he says, well, run game is working well, let's stick with it. No, this should be a pass-first team. I also disagree with the way he's tried to use Vereen as a goal line and up the middle runner. Those aren't his strengths, and I wanted to keep him healthy for the screen passes and the outside runs he excels at. And then she says, looking forward to making some cranberry bread. Yes, Miss Robin's cranberry bread on the lifestyle site, which is something I'm sure that Bob Sosie is going to try very, very soon as well. Right, Bob?
I was looking forward to more cranberry bread this week, John.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm going to make sure that you're included in that because Robin has already said, when do you want me to bake the next batch for the guys? They'll take it anytime because, you know, they love things free, so.
Yeah, we all do.
Yes.
Why we're in the media in the first place.
We got to make sure, though, that it's on a Wednesday because it's been on a Tuesday in the past. And since you come in here with your show on Wednesday, I'll make sure that we bring the bread in here on Wednesday.
Well, that's much appreciated. And I know the PFW guys made sure that we had a cookie left over from their earlier show.
Well, see, Wednesday's usually the day as well that media food comes in, and we never see that here. Never, ever.
You guys missed out today.
It was
a good spread today.
Was it good today?
It was better than usual because of the Revolution and Patriots press conferences. The Revs, of course, getting geared up for the playoffs.
Right.
So, really, they went all out today.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to start showing up early rather than do my homework for the show. I guess I'll just have to, you know, bring the computer and try to do it here.
I mean, I had a rooting interest already for the Revs, of course, like we all
do.
But
boy,
now I tell you what, there's extra incentive. They've got to get to the MLS Cup this year.
keep
advancing and keep holding those press conferences
and keep feeding the media.
Absolutely.
And you'll get the coverage. No doubt about that. All right, what's coming up on your show?
Well, we've got a really good show today, I think. We've got Dante Hightower, of course, from the Patriots. Now wearing the green dot as the quarterback of the defense, so to speak, from his linebacker spot, talking about trying not to match wits with Peyton Manning and the danger when you try to do that against the Broncos' outstanding quarterback. Dave Logan, the voice of the Broncos, one of the great athletes in the history, really, of sports, period. This is a guy who was drafted in three sports along with Dave Winfield, NBA, Major League Baseball, and, of course, the NFL. We'll hopefully talk with Scott Zolak. Andy Benoit of the MMQB and Sports Illustrated does a great job analyzing video.
Good.
He's going to take time as well to join us, and Jackie Britton will
Good.
Be on the show.
Awesome. Sounds like it's packed. Rock and roll coming up. Final comment then coming here from Michael, whose emails, one of the keys for the Patriots beating Denver is not having the clock stop on short passing downs. Completions of the backfield and the bubble screen game to the backs and tight ends is where our bread is buttered. Forget establishing a running game. It'll come naturally when Tom picks apart Denver when they go into a blitzing zone style of pass coverage trying to get to him. On defense, I don't agree with those who want blitz packages too often. We need to fight for coverage sacks with tackles who are double-teamed and put eight DBs or linebackers out on the field. That's Mike emailing from Bath, Maine. Thank you, Mike. I actually think that you're pretty much spot on. You don't want to blitz too much because, you know, Peyton will chew you up and spit you out. But if you can give him pause for concern where he's throwing the ball in coverage, then you might be able to get one of your effective guys, get him on a coverage sack. That's where you might be able to get your damage done. And we'll jump more into the X's and O's of it all in the playbook tomorrow. Same Pats time, same Pats channel, beginning at 2 p.m. Eastern time here on Patriots.com radio. Our thanks to Jeff Legwold, who covers the Broncos for ESPN and ESPN.com and NFL Networks and NFL.com's Bert Breer for joining us here today. Stay tuned. Bob Soucy's show is next.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.